Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Hancock County property tax bills for the second half of the year would normally be due this week, but they were delayed this time around due to a massive recalculation effort as provisions of the relief bills signed into law late last year take effect. We'll tell you what that means for you. Also this morning, does your dog have bad breath? It's one of the most common complaints among pet owners, but in most cases, there's a simple cause and a simple solution. And happening around town, educate, exercise, empower. That's what you get out of it when you walk with a doc, a new monthly initiative from Blanchard Valley Health System and the YMCA. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, July 8th, 2026. The celebration of America 250 continues today. Communities across the country, including here locally, will take part in a simultaneous reading of the Declaration of Independence. The nationwide effort will span, it says here, 9,500 miles and 9 time zones to mark the first public reading of the document on July 8th of 1776. I had no idea. 9 time zones? I didn't know that we had 9 time zones in the U.S. I know the 4 in the continental U.S., and then Alaska's on a different time zone, and Hawaii, of course, on a different time zone. But that's only 6. Where are the other 3? Is it different territories? I don't know. Anyway, I digress. Readings are expected to take place in over 700 participating communities, including our own, representing all 50 states and the 5 U.S. territories. Locally, the event will take place at 6 p.m. this evening on the front lawn of the Hancock County Courthouse. So that's what it's all about, in case you heard about that, the public reading of the Declaration of Independence all across the country today. Hear ye, hear ye. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started. It's midweek Wednesday. Our friends at Wallet Hub are out with their list of the most stressed cities in America for 2026. The most stressed cities in America. And sad to say that Ohio does not do too well on that list. They compared numbers in 39 key metrics, including average weekly work hours, median credit scores, food insecurity, and divorce rates, just as a sampling there. And again, so you get an idea. Those are things that cause stress, right? And Detroit topped the list as the most stressed city in the country. Memphis was the runner-up, and then Cleveland came in third. Of course they did. Why is it that there's, anytime there is a negative list, that it seems like those are the big three, Detroit, Memphis, Cleveland. They're going to be right up there. If it is something negative, those three are going to be right at the top of the list. And I know Cleveland in recent years has made a really concerted effort to shed that image. But, I mean, this is objective data. I mean, this isn't somebody just saying, hey, I think Cleveland is the third most stressed city in the country by their reputation. I mean, they've got verifiable, objective data that backs that up. So, I mean, it is what it is. Detroit, Memphis, Cleveland. Akron was number 9 on the list. Another city that's usually up there whenever there's, you know, a list of negative things. So Akron was 9th on the list, and Toledo came in at number 12, the only other state to place 3 cities in the top 15 was Louisiana. By the way, in case you're curious, Fremont, California was the least stressed city in the country, and Columbus was the least stressed in Ohio, but still, Columbus was 59th overall out of, I think, 182 cities that were included in the ranking. So even the least stressed city in Ohio is pretty high up there. So not doing so. We need to chill. We need to chill out in Ohio, apparently. A couple of other items here are rather interesting. The historic Claudia Sanders Dinner House is headed for auction. soon to be on the auction block. This is the house where Claudia Sanders and her husband, Harland Sanders, otherwise known as Colonel Sanders, they opened in 1959 and used it as their first headquarters of their Kentucky Fried Chicken empire. And it will soon be on the auction block. You could own the very first Kentucky Fried Chicken location. The family lived in the home in Shelbyville, Kentucky, known as Blackwood Hall, from 1959 until 1984. And customers from all across the country have flocked to this establishment for more than 60 years. The auction will not only include the Claudia Sanders dinner house, but also personal memorabilia from Colonel Sanders, including his personal working planner, handwritten recipes, and his signature bow tie. Wait, did they say handwritten recipes? I wonder if it would be that 11 herbs and spices, that secret 11 herbs and spices recipe that the company has protected almost militarily for all of its existence. I would imagine not. I mean, maybe it's their coleslaw recipe or something. I don't know. But handwritten recipes would be included in it. A public preview of the collection that is up for auction will be held later this month. So, kind of interesting if you're a Kentucky Fried Chicken fan. And who isn't, really? I mean, yummy stuff. How crazy is this? This is a story out of California, and this is a wild story, and I'm not really sure why this would be anyone's fault other than the state of California. But more than 11,000 drivers in California are being ordered to retake the driver's license exam, the written exam from the DMV. They're going to have to retake the test. This after the agency discovered unspecified irregularities involving the tests that were administered between July of 2025 and April of 2026. Drivers have 30 days to pass the test again, or they risk having their licenses suspended. They had to revoke the licenses of anyone who took the test between July of last year and April of this year if they don't retake it because of some unspecified irregularities. They haven't said exactly what those irregularities are. The DMV says the original test results did not comply with state testing requirements, but they are not specifying what the issue is. They also have not accused any of the drivers who were affected by this. They've not accused anybody of cheating. This is not a cheating scandal. So we don't know exactly what it is. So why? I mean, I get it. I, you know, would hope we don't have, you know, thousands of unsafe drivers on the roads. But why is this any? Why did they have to retake the exam because you messed it up? I guess we want to keep the road safe. But if they've been driving for almost a year and they've had no issues or whatever, is that their fault? They've got 30 days. They got to retake the test or, you know, pull their license. Wow, that would be. And I don't know. Again, I would assume these are first time drivers because I don't think they make you take a test. I know they don't in Ohio. I would assume in California, they don't make you take the test every single time you go to renew your license. So presumably these are new drivers, not somebody who's been on the road for like 20 years or whatever. But yeah, that's crazy. Gotta go and retake your driver's test. Start over. And how about a World Cup story? The World Cup continues. The quarterfinals are now set. 8 teams remain in the competition. There are no games over the next couple of days. I think Friday is the next, the first of the quarterfinal games. But anyway, it appears the World Cup, so we got all of these World Cup stories. It appears that the World Cup is sparking more than just soccer fever. Tinder, the dating app, Tinder reported a 34% increase in non-local users in the New York and New Jersey area compared to the same period last year. What's the difference? You got all of these World Cup fans coming in from all over the world. to cheer on their teams and maybe get a little something-something on the side, apparently. International visitors using the app mostly hail from the UK, Norway, and Canada, while domestic users are traveling from Miami, Los Angeles, and Boston. Looking for a little hookup in between the games. On June 13th, when Brazil faced Morocco at MetLife Stadium, Tinder saw a 35% jump in access to the app in the area. And it's not just the New York, New Jersey area. That's just an example. But across all 16 of the host cities, international user activity jumped over 47% at the start of the tournament. And it's not even just the U.S. Monterrey, Mexico led all cities with an 80% surge in Tinder activity during the Sweden-Tunisia matchup. So apparently, all of the football fans are looking to score in more ways than one. Yeah, you know what I mean. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the 80s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the 60s. The Seneca County Sheriff's Office says a man wanted on felony domestic violence charges tried to run over deputies during a traffic stop and was fatally shot. The Sheriff's Office says the 43-year-old suspect from Bloomville refused to get out of his vehicle and pulled out several knives. The Sheriff's Office said the man then put his vehicle in reverse to escape, but Bloomville police had him blocked, so he put it in drive, and deputies were still in front and to the side of the vehicle, stuck along the guardrail, and they fired into the vehicle, striking the man before he could run one of them over. The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation was contacted, and the deputies will be on administrative leave until the investigation is completed. A work group is weighing in on school bus rides for both public and private school students in Ohio.
Our news partners at Cleveland.com say across the state, nearly 22,000 kids who mostly attend private and charter schools are deemed by districts as impractical to transport. This means they do not get bus rides to school due to interference with existing routes or the distance. But now the work group is recommending that the state get rid of those guidelines to ensure every eligible student has a ride to school under Ohio law.
ONN's Brissa Bradfield reporting. Get more on our website. Community members are invited to attend a public reading of the Declaration of Independence at 6 p.m. today on the front lawn of the Hancock County Courthouse. Hancock County Commissioner Tim Bechtel says the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence took place on July 8, 1776, making this year's event especially meaningful as we commemorate the 250th anniversary of our nation's founding. During the event, local residents and community leaders will take turns reading portions of the Declaration aloud. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, normally, Hancock County property taxes for the second half of the year would be coming due, what, I guess this week. But as you have probably heard, those bills were delayed due to a massive recalculation effort as provisions of the relief measures that were signed into law late last year take effect. Hancock County Auditor Charity Rauschenberg joins us this morning to explain what that means for you. And first off, this is not unique to Hancock County. I think we have to say, in case somebody is sitting there saying, what in the world is going on with the Hancock County Auditor's Office, is not just Hancock County.
That is correct. This has impacted all 88 counties across the state of Ohio.
And with similar results, delays in the bills, extension of the deadline, and so on and so forth. So not unique to Hancock County. And there's a lot to parse here. Folks may remember HB 186, which contained a number of provisions to hold the line on what have been seen by many as runaway property tax rates. This recalculation is due to the first of those provisions taking effect, which are what?
So the first one that we're tackling is what is called the inflation cap credit. And so this was to match up some of our increases to inflation. instead of some, as you phrased, the runaway in tax rates. This is capping it more reasonably with the inflation rates.
And there are also a couple of corrections to the collection rates for a couple of specific levies in particular. Does that also have to do with the relief bill, or is this something separate that just happens to be happening at the same time?
As you can imagine, 88 counties making adjustments with the Department of Taxation. Occasionally, some miscommunications occur. I haven't had this happen too often, so lucky us that it happened this year with 186 also being applied. So there was a lot of calculations going on. We found that we had a new substitute levy in one of our school districts that needed to be adjusted after the valuation triennial update. And then also the Liberty Township fire protection levy needed to be adjusted to a replacement, which that was the last time a replacement could be put on the election to be voted in. It did pass, and unfortunately it had the wrong rate applied. So we did have some corrections on top of 186.
So interestingly enough, while the idea was to provide property tax relief, some people will actually see their tax bill go up as a result of a combination of these things.
Yes, there will be some minimal adjustments when we net some of those for the Liberty School District and the Liberty Township, or if they are not in those, it could be a couple other school districts that didn't have a reduction to offset that amount.
Well, and that's the other thing. Again, getting back to the reductions and the cap, that's not going to impact, because that's basically focused on the school district amounts that they are getting in the individual district. So it's going to vary depending on what school district someone lives in, right? That's really at the heart of it, the crux of it.
Yes. Unfortunately, I cannot have a one size fits all answer. It's more parcel specific by the school district that they're in. And we are the home to 9 county school districts, right, along with Findlay City Schools. But this also impacts 8-9 other school districts that we're adjacent to in other counties.
So you've got a lot of different school districts, and every one of those is different. So some are getting more relief than others. Why is that?
So Findlay City School District actually had their 20 mills voted in by their voters over decades. And so they are above what the guaranteed minimum is. So there is no inflationary cap credit because they did not fall to the what they call the floor and guarantee. The other 8 school districts happen to be at the 20 mil floor, and so they have an impact from the triennial that legislation capped it.
And so this is really complicated. You start to see why this has taken so long to figure out and calculate all of this, because you basically have to go through each particular parcel, each particular property, and calculate this separately.
We have had a lot of communication back and forth with the State Department of Taxation going over all our school districts, and we're just one county that has several school districts within it.
So are these one-time adjustments, or will this have to be periodically recalculated moving forward?
Well, as you mentioned at the beginning, that House Bill 186, this is just one part of House Bill 186. Next year, we will start to implement another piece of House Bill 186. And we had to do some catch-up because we could not get system software tested for all these calculations to apply it to first half. And so both halves are hitting the second half. Next year, it will be shown on the individual halves of the tax bill.
So once this calculation is done, if I understand what you're saying right, once this is done, the formula will be updated and it'll all be pretty much seamless moving forward. You won't have to go through and redo this every single time.
I wish that were true, but some things may change as we are calculating next year, and we'll have to change the, not the formula, but we may have to change tax reduction factors.
And then, just because this all isn't confusing enough, there are additional provisions that were included in HB 186 that will be coming in the future as well.
Yes, they will start to increase homeowner. The occupancy rate will be changing next year for those that are owner-occupied. The offset is that those who are not owner-occupied will see less of a reduction.
But the upside is that it sounds like those will be much simpler to calculate.
Yes, those will be across our county applied the same way.
So again, as the dust settles on all of this, as we said, the tax bills were delayed because of all of this updating and all of this calculating had to be done. Do you anticipate any future delays when these additional provisions kick in, when you have to go through and recalculate again, as you were mentioning?
I think next year will be a little bit easier. We won't be in a triennial update in which all the values are changing. And B, it's already effective, and so our vendors are aware of the changes that need to be, take place for next year.
And now, most people who have mortgages on their property, which are most people, I think, will pay those taxes, their property taxes, not directly to the treasurer's office, not directly to the county, but rather through an escrow account that is managed typically by their lender. Should I be concerned that there might be any hiccups in the process because of these delays and recalculations and all of that? Should I be contacting my lender just to make sure that these are paid the way they should be paid?
I'm not an expert at that. The treasurer deals with the escrow accounts and the mortgage companies. Mm-hmm. But I really can't speak on their behalf how they are going to start adjusting, because just like us, they have parcel by parcel tax calculations that'll be changing.
A fair point. I suppose, I guess the message would be just keep a close, watchful eye on that to make sure that if your taxes are paid through escrow, that they are actually paid and they're paid correctly and so on and so forth, because you don't want to run into any problems on that end.
Right. And the best way is to look at our website. We have the documentation out there for the tax calcs comparing first half to second half. We still are under construction because that is another vendor that we're working with on software updates. So the balance that is on the website is the amount due. It may not, for those accountants that or people that like to double check us, yeah, it will not foot if there is a tax credit, but it will be reduced by that amount.
Okay. Again, Hancock County Auditor Charity Rauschenberg trying to explain everything that's going on here with these property taxes as the provisions of those relief measures start to kick in. And we will, again, continue to watch it. So the new due date, like we said, the bills have been late going out, but they should be going out if they haven't already within the next week or so, right? And then the due date is now when?
August 7th is our new due date for this year.
All right. Again, Hancock County Auditor Charity Rauschenberg with us this morning. Charity, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Well, if you have ever been going in for a good cuddle with your fur baby and then stopped in your tracks by Fido's not-so-fresh breath, you know the challenge here. Keeping your dog's breath fresh is one of the most common concerns among pet owners. And the good news is that there is something you can do. Pet parenting expert Kristen Levine is here with some tips for us. And Kristen, what are the most common causes of doggy bad breath?
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me. Well, the most common cause is when bacteria builds up on your dog's teeth, and over time it hardens into plaque and tartar. And that is a red flag for pet parents, something to pay attention to, because it means you probably need to pay a little bit more attention to your pet's oral care routine. But it's it's more than just a stinky inconvenience. It's something that keeps us from spending those up close moments together.
Yeah. And I've often heard veterinarians say that a dog's breath can be a sign of medical issues. Is there any concern that if we are taking steps to mask the bad breath or to solve the bad breath, that we might be masking the warning signs of something more serious?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I would say your goal is not to mask bad breath, because first of all, it's very difficult to do. You know, that plaque and tartar buildup is very, very odoriferous, as I'd say. And so what I recommend instead is that you build four different routines into your daily life with your dog. Mm-hmm. The first routine is really an annual one, and that's to make sure you're making those annual veterinary checkups, because at that appointment, your vet is going to do a dental exam, check out their mouth and teeth, and they can tell you if it's time for a professional dental cleaning. They can also identify if there is a broken tooth or an abscess that's causing that odor. So that's the really, really important first step. The next three steps are super easy. They're things you can do at home, like making sure your dog has plenty of fresh, clean water, because dehydration or thirst can contribute to bad breath. Also, you want to try to brush your dog's teeth, and it doesn't have to be every day. It could be once or twice a week. You'd be surprised at the difference that can make in keeping the plaque and tartar at bay. And then the last routine that you want to implement is daily dental treats with like Minty's Fresh Bites is what we use, because that's not only a great oral hygiene habit, but it's also kind of a moment that you and your dog can enjoy together, treat time.
So what should we be looking for when choosing a dental treat? Not just a treat, so important, the point that you make. Mm-hmm. There are an awful lot of treats, quote-unquote treats, we can give our dogs, but ones that have that dental benefit.
Yeah, I think the most important things to look for, Chris, are textures. A texture your dog will enjoy chewing on, because the more they enjoy the chew, the more time it takes, and the more the treat will get into those nooks and crannies of their teeth. Okay. You also want to look for one that has ingredients that support fresher breath, and ideally you want to find one with low calories. And that's why we chose Minty's Fresh Bites here at our house. My dog Tulip actually gets four of these a day, because they're only 7.5 calories each.
Okay.
And I love that and as far as supporting fresh breath, the Minty's are made with five natural breath freshening herbs, things like parsley, peppermint, even dill. And so that's the breath freshening part of it. They smell great. They smell terrific. And the texture, I mentioned texture is really important before. And the Minties just have this texture that my dog Tulip loves. And they also have a second option if you want a little bit of variety. And that is a dental bone that's shaped like a little bone, and it has little nubs on it, so that when your dog is chewing it, it kind of feels really good on their teeth and gums. The whole idea behind Minties, though, is that they're made very low calories so that you can build a treating routine in multiple times a day.
Well, that's actually was going to be what I was going to ask next. How should these fit into your daily routine? I mean, how many a day, or, you know, what's the ideal way of incorporating this into the dog's routine? Because we know for dogs, routine is everything.
Everything. And if you forget something, they will remind you.
Yes.
But I love this question, because it's recommended, veterinarians typically recommend that your treats don't make up more than 10% of your dog's total caloric intake for the day. Now, if you're not sure how many calories your dog should have a day, you can certainly talk to your veterinarian about that. But with the Minties being 7.5 calories a day, I give Tulip four a day. She gets one after her morning walk. She gets one just for being a good girl. She gets one after her nap in the afternoon, and she always gets one before bed. And those four treats only add up to 30 calories. So I'm well under, you know, that 10% daily caloric intake. And like I said earlier, if I forget, especially the bedtime treat, sometimes I forget that, but she'll go straight to the pantry and stand right next to the drawer where I keep them so that I don't forget.
Again, Kristen Levine is a pet parenting expert with us this morning. Where do folks find more your tips and resources here?
They've got a great blog over at minties.com. You can get more information and tips there. Also, you can pick up the Fresh Bites at Walmart, Chewy, Amazon, even Petco. And I would just encourage your audience to not let something as fixable as bad dog breath get in the way of cuddles and snuggles with your dog, because science tells us that when we spend close-up time with our dogs, we release a hormone called oxytocin, and that's the happy love hormone. And we both benefit from that, and it helps to build those strong bonds. So don't let bad breath get in the way of that.
Amen to that. Kristen Levine, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
A little broken news close to home this morning in Waterville. The search is on for a suspect who police say tried to rob a Kroger store at gunpoint on Sunday. Reports say that the suspect approached the service desk at the store right around 5:45 in the afternoon with a gun and a note demanding cash. The Kroger employee refused the demand, and the apparently confused suspect fled the scene. Hands a note. The employee said, no. Give me all your money. No. So he just took off. Clearly not a professional criminal. But maybe it was his first time. Maybe he's new at this. I don't know. Maybe a life of crime is not for you. No one was hurt. And, to the best of my knowledge, the suspect still remains at large, last I heard. So, elsewhere in the broken news, a North Carolina teenager is facing charges for allegedly using an explosive device to break into a school in Greensboro. Now, most teenagers I know can't wait to get out of school. This kid was trying to get in. Authorities say 18-year-old Solomon Caravello Bell allegedly used a plasma cannon to damage a door allowing access into Smith High School. He now faces multiple charges, including felony possession of a weapon of mass destruction. I don't know, where do you get a plasma cannon? That's not something that you can order off of Amazon, right? Also a charge of felony malicious use of an explosive to damage property. Okay. Is that most teenagers, they can't wait to get out of school. He's trying to get in. I don't know. This is crazy. A 65-year-old Arizona man faces federal charges after allegedly living illegally in the Tonto National Forest for 8 years. He was living in the National Forest. Mark Aaron Gatz was arrested after a Forest Service officer discovered a makeshift homestead spread across nearly an acre that wasn't deep in the forest. It was actually very near some popular recreation trails, and yet nobody seemed to notice this for 8 years. They said they were flabbergasted by the large structures, the vehicle canopies, the fire pits, everything littering the site. He was arrested on charges because, for reference, park rules limit national forest camping to 14 days within any 30-day period. So he had overstayed his welcome. 8 years setting up a homestead there in the forest. It's crazy. And finally here in the broken news, here's another World Cup story. A Colombian man visiting the U.S. for the World Cup was arrested after leading deputies in southwest Iowa on a high-speed chase. The Fremont County Sheriff's Office in Iowa says Nestor Morantes Segura was driving 90 miles an hour on Interstate 29 when deputies tried to stop him. Authorities say he continued for about 10 miles before being stopped. Mr. Segura told deputies he did not hear the siren, and he believed that in the U.S., drivers only had to pull over when both lights and sirens were activated. No, that's not the way it works. I doubt that really is the way it works in Colombia either. But anyway, he was charged with eluding. He posted a bond. They bailed himself out of jail and was later allowed to travel to Kansas City to watch the Colombia game, and they advanced in the World Cup. So At least he got to see the game. Little culture shock there, apparently. There you go. Here are all these stories of the people enjoying themselves in the U.S. This guy enjoyed himself in a different way, or got himself into a little bit of trouble visiting the U.S. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Finley, get ready to rock for a cause. Join Flag City Honor Flight on Saturday, July 11th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Finley Elks Lodge 75 for the Reunion Band Concert and Dance. Enjoy a fantastic evening of live music and dancing, all while supporting Flag City Honor Flight, a local organization helping veterans visit the memorials in Washington, D.C. that honor their service and sacrifice. Come out to 900 West Melrose Avenue. Let's show our veterans how much we appreciate them.
This message provided by WFIN.
It's the battle of the sexes in your daily download this morning. The numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A new YouGov survey of 1,100 U.S. adults finds that men are significantly more confident than women are in their ability to survive high-stakes survival scenarios. Men more confident in their ability in high-stakes survival scenarios than are women. Among the findings, 46% of men believe that they could survive a week alone in the wilderness. 46% of men said, yep, no problem. That compared to just 21% of women who were asked the same question. Men also outpaced women in confidence about escaping a sinking car underwater. 41% to 19%. Men could say they could escape a sinking car underwater. Surviving at sea on a life raft. 23% of men believe that they could do that. Just 8% of women think that they could survive at sea on a life raft. Men also are more likely than women to say that they could safely land a passenger airplane in an emergency situation, relying only on the assistance of air traffic control. 23% of men and 13% of women believe that they could land a plane if they had to. All right. This one really got me. 14% of men believe that they could navigate to a destination using only the stars. Yeah, right. I can't even follow Google Maps properly half the time. 14% think they can navigate by the stars. Sure you could. In other words, 14% of men are liars. Navigate by the stars. Only 6% of women believe that they could navigate by the stars. So now, all of that said, all of those scenarios, men outrank women, at least in their own mind, their own belief in their abilities. Okay, but women do have one scenario where they outrank men. Women were more likely to say that they could deliver a baby in an emergency. 35% of women said that they could do that, only 27% of men deliver a baby in an emergency. So that, I guess, is understandable. An interesting survey. You want to have a conversation. Take this quiz with your spouse, with your significant other, your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. Who would be better in these high-stakes survival scenarios? You want to start an argument? That would be fun. So tonight, we hope to see you at Riverside Park for the Riverside Civic Concert Series and the final concert from the Finley Civic Concert Band in their 75th season. Big salute to America in honor of America 250. That gets underway at 7 o'clock tonight at Riverside Park. It's going to be a terrific time, so we hope to see you there. And then later this week or this weekend, we want to see you out at Emory Adams. We'll get you out in the park again this time. for a little bit of exercise, a little bit of education. That is basically the idea of the Walk with a Doc program that begins this month and continues on forward from there. It is an initiative from Blanchard Valley Health System and the YMCA. And Dr. Bill Coes is with us once again this morning with more details about Walk with a Doc. Talk a little bit about the idea behind this program here.
Well, it came to the forefront by one of our medical staff members, Chris, Dr. Navetta Patty, who's a psychiatrist, is also a half marathon runner and in really good physical condition. And she brought it to the medical society as an idea of getting the community out to walk, out to exercise. I think I would say it's in the context, too, of what we have been trying to do in the community, our Be Healthy Now group of looking about getting people just more active in all sorts of ways for their physical health, mental health, spiritual health, of doing things. And so she had looked into this. There is a national organization that's called Walk with a Doc. And the idea is as you talked about, is to get people out. We are going to meet at 9 o'clock at Emory Adams this Saturday. Our plans are the second Saturday of every month, as long as the weather stays pretty well. Mm-hmm. Answer if anyone has any questions, just in general about anything. We're not doing examinations. This is not a doctor's office, but to talk about high cholesterol, talk about the benefits of different things, including exercise, and then to take a walk and to be able to chat and enjoy nature, maybe see some birds at Emory Adams down along Eagle Creek. So that's the thought. It probably take about an hour. There are several different walking paths down there, so we don't have a specific amount. It would be up to the person walking a half a mile. The longest is I just walked it with my dog the other nights. About 2.5 miles, takes about an hour. And so we're looking forward to having some people come out and join us.
I love the idea of being able to interact with the medical professionals and kind of a lower intensity level. Like you said, this is not a doctor's visit. There's not a big examination. But, you know, everybody has questions, and this is a perfect opportunity to sort of ask those in a casual way.
Absolutely. And I think that whole idea is part of this. There are things that come up. People, especially as we're getting older, and I am in that category for sure,
right.
People ask about, well, what kind of insurance should I be looking at? Or should I be looking at advanced directives or just the high level things? How can I prepare to make sure I take care of myself? How do I take care of my family?
Yeah.
General thoughts that way. In addition to what is the best nutrition? What are people talking about?
Mm-hmm. I've heard about this diet. What do you think? You know, is
exactly.
This something? Yeah,
exactly.
Because we're confronted with it all the time.
One of the big things as we talk about brain health is getting out and doing things, not just the activity.
Yeah.
Social isolation is a really big thing. Now, a lot of times the social isolation is related to physical activity. But one of the things that, again, back to our Be Healthy Now that we're trying to express to people is there almost every disease or problem you can get. In addition, if prevention is some exercise, getting out and doing things. It certainly has helped our people with Parkinson's. We've been on when we've talked to that about how much people do. The same way with cognitive disorders, dementia, heart disease, being on some kind of a program and doing things is really important.
Yeah, and the psychological effect of just being out and interacting with other human beings. We were talking about it on the program just a few days ago about how we are doing less of that, and there, you know, that takes both a physical and an emotional toll. And this is an opportunity to just get out and meet other people, kind of reestablish the idea of community.
Well, for sure, and I think a lot of us are concerned about the social media, the use of phones, of people not talking to each other, and there's lots of things that you can talk about, but the more we can get at any kind of a level. We had a meeting this morning that we were talking about how can we get kids doing more. Mm-hmm. So this is an opportunity to do that. But the social interaction, being able to speak with each other, communicate, all of those things kind of come together in these kinds of opportunities. At least that's what we think from a physician standpoint, provider standpoint.
And intergenerational interaction there as well, because this is open to all ages. I mean, we talk about the benefits, especially as we age, but this is open to all, and all are welcome.
Absolutely. And if you have a dog that you feel comfortable with bringing, I'm going to bring my dog.
There you go.
He interacts with everyone. He will want everyone to make sure they pet him. And so it's open to everybody. Exactly.
And again, the first one is going to be what you mentioned, the second Saturday of every month is the plan. And the first one is this Saturday. Give us all of the details again.
Yes. So it's Saturday. That's July the 11th. It's from 9 o'clock till 10 o'clock.
Okay.
It's at Emory Adams down on 6th Street. We're going to meet where the playground is, and we'll have a few minutes of interaction. People want to introduce themselves and just in general. And Dr. Patty's going to talk about a health topic related to physical activity, interactions with mental health, et cetera. And then we're going to go out for a walk and be done probably around 10 o'clock and people can enjoy the rest of the weekend.
And obviously, there's no charge. I notice on the website there's a link to RSVP, but that's not necessarily required,
that
right?
That is not necessary. If you want to, we don't know how many people are going to show up. We're hoping that there will be some. We're doing this in conjunction with the Y. They've been helping us with the logistics, but there is no charge, not anything. We just want to get you out walking.
There we go. Saturday, 8 a.m. at Emory Adams. We'll see you out there. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Walk with the Doc program locally. And Dr. Bill Coes, Blanchard Valley Health System, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for giving me a chance to talk. Thanks, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, State Auditor Keith Faber, who is also the Republican nominee for Ohio Attorney General, will be in Findlay later today to speak with local business leaders. He will join us for a conversation as well. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.